I'm Dennis Galecki, and welcome to our noon hour lecture discussion. Normally every second and fourth Tuesday, but as you apparently are keenly aware of, revised for the month of April to be every Tuesday. Please make note, every Tuesday. There's four of them in April, and we will have a delightful range of speakers, and especially pleased with naturally today's. This is sponsored by the Center for the Study of Art, Architecture, History, and Nature. And that's simply a digital enterprise and network designed to help link volunteers and lifelong learning communities. It's part of something I call the Buffalo Chautauqua idea. That truly a lifelong learning center, and we'll be hearing more about Chautauqua as the month goes on. Two of our four speakers are from Chautauqua, and one next month, and we'll see the linkages. I have this series is called the Imagine Series because we ask every president, executive director, CEO to imagine our region's future through the lens of the organization that they are running. Each one has a strategic plan, a mission, a vision, and the thought was a simple one. Let's hear what those are. Record them, listen to them, have a discussion about them, and in the collective, perhaps get a better sense of where our community is going. A little bit of a unique idea, but it seems to be, for those of you who have been, and many familiar faces are here, have been regulars to this series, what a wide range of talent we have attracted in culturals and educational facilities. Often people who have come from outside the city and come to Buffalo. And that's the case with our speaker today. President Aaron Podolevsky became the eighth president of Buffalo State College on July 1st of last year. He was the president and professor of anthropology at the University of Central Missouri before coming here. And I'm going to read these in particular, because they are so much in line with what I think our community is looking at doing itself. And that was, and this is off their webpage, this is what he did at his last in his last position. He raised the institution's academic profile. He initiated strategic and master planning efforts. He cultivated mutually enriching campus community plans. We heard that just last month from a previous speaker from Buff State. He enhanced regional economic development and launched a landmark energy savings and sustainability initiatives at that university. Now, I would say those are very much in line with my sense of what I've heard other speakers and certainly other leaders in our community putting in their own words. I think those are important, and I hope they're somewhat woven into your stay here at Buffalo State College. Here, Dr. Podolevsky earned his PhD with distinction in anthropology from SUNY Stony Brook, as well as a Master of Arts in Liberal Studies and Anthropology at the same school. And his bachelor's degree is in mathematics, and that goes back to San Jose State University. His wife, Ronnie Lynn, is an attorney, and two grown sons. Very, I enjoy the well-rootedness of sons that are named Noah and Isaac. I also, in introducing you, enjoyed one aspect in listening to your inauguration speech that was given back in October 29th, last fall. Every time I begin a tour with school students, K through college, often Buffalo State College students, at the Albright Knox or the Martin House, I ask the audience if they want to go on an adventure. You alluded to coming to Buffalo as part of your view of life's adventure. It was another spot on your journey, life's journey, and seeing it as an adventure. So it's with that great pleasure that we have invited you and are glad you accepted the invitation of being part of our adventure of this noon hour lecture and helping us imagine our future through the eyes of the president of Buffalo State College, Dr. Aaron Podolevsky.
Thank you, Dennis, for that wonderful introduction. It's great to be here this noon and see so many of you here. I was not sure how many people would come out at a noon hour for this sort of a chat, and what a wonderful idea about imagining the future from different perspectives. I very much appreciate it. It was just a couple of weeks ago, actually, that I gave a talk at a noon hour, rather like this, at the Rotary. And somebody earlier mentioned they had a spouse who was at the Rotary that day. And as I was about to stand up to begin my remarks, I realized that something that happened to me nearly 50 years ago has an awful lot to do with why I'm standing here, or why I was standing there at that time. And I just felt like I had to talk about it. And so I want to talk about it today a little bit as well, because it weaves in with the whole idea of Buffalo State and Buffalo. But maybe it wasn't 50 years ago, maybe it was 48. You know, when you get to this age, those extra couple of years matter. So about 1963, I was thinking about whether or not I ought to go to college. And my stepfather thought that my primary skill would be to be a car mechanic, because I always had a car engines hanging from a tree someplace on the property. But what was really interesting is back when I was young, before I was born, my parents lived in New York, and they eloped. My mother was very young; she was 18. They eloped and went to California, where my dad began painting backdrops for movie scenery. And about a year later, it determined it wasn't really going as well as they liked, and they came back to New York and they were divorced. So I moved in with my grandparents and lived in various parts of New York City, all the boroughs except for the Staten Island. In 1954, my mother remarried and they moved to California. So growing up, I was spending my life in New York City or California, back and forth each year, each season. And in fact, had they given frequent flyer miles at the time, I'd be flying for free these days, because I was just constantly on the move. So when time came for me to go to college, I said, okay, I think I'd like to go to college. And both my parents, one in New York, one in California, said, sounds like a pretty good idea, so long as the other one pays for it. Well, you know, that was great, except it really left me kind of in a blank. But down the road from me, about 20 miles, was a school called San Jose State College. It's part of the California State College system, and it's very much like Buffalo State. And I was able to go down there, and at that time, the people of California supported higher education, and the tuition was free. It was $42 a semester for fees, and that was it. And I could go down there and I could live cheap and eat pretty cheap and get a college education. 4 years later, we got a degree in math. That was very important to me. Without the public access of public higher education, I would not be here where I am today. Now, at the same time, that little town in California grew up to become Silicon Valley. And if I followed my dad's advice and bought some property and become an auto mechanic, I would be a very, very, very wealthy man these days. But I chose higher education, and I'm absolutely glad of it. But after I got my degree, I came back to New York, couldn't get that moving around thing, and I began to teach mathematics on Long Island. And I was a math teacher. I spent about 5 years as a math teacher, and during the first few years, I decided that I had studied mostly, almost exclusively, math and science and very little other subjects, so I decided to go back for a degree in liberal studies. You could take a lot of different things, you know, psychology, literature, philosophy, and anthropology. So I took an anthropology course. I took a second anthropology course, I took a third anthropology course, and this professor said to me, "You seem pretty good at this. Why don't you come to graduate school?" And I said to her, "How can I go to graduate school? I don't have a degree in anthropology. I've got a math degree." And she said to me, "You'll catch up." Well, it was easy for her to say, but I did. I took a leave of absence from my teaching job, sort of bailed out, got married so somebody could support me, and went back to graduate school. And about 4 years later, I found myself and my wife and our year-old baby in the highlands of Papua New Guinea, living with people that were literally in the Stone Age. A few introduced steel axes, but everything was fairly traditional. What you might call the bush. You know, you have to go out there, cart your own stuff out, get the folks to help you build a house, move in the house, that sort of situation. I was there to study warfare and conflict resolution, or what some would like to think of as law. I came back, I wrote my dissertation after studying New Guinea. That's why I say it was life's adventures. And I'm starting to look for a job. And this same professor says to me, "I've got a friend out at Northwestern in Evanston, up by Chicago, and he's beginning a research project, and he's looking for people to, sort of work on it with him." So I got on a plane and went to Chicago, and I met this fellow, Fred DeBow, and I said, "Tell me about your research project." He said, "Well, I'm doing studies of urban crime prevention in three cities, in Chicago, Philadelphia, and San Francisco. We're looking at 10 neighborhoods, and we're going to see what people are doing about crime." And I said to Fred, "I don't know anything about crime, other than that I committed, I don't know anything about crime prevention. I'm not a sociologist." He said, "You'll catch up." So I took the job, and I moved to Northwestern. I had a degree in math. He wanted somebody that could deal with the statistics. And as an anthropologist, I knew how to work with people. We had 10 neighborhoods with a person living in each neighborhood taking notes, 10,000 pages of field notes on each, 1,000 pages on every neighborhood, and put all that together. And so even though I had a degree in anthropology, my first two books were about community crime prevention in cities. Well, after a while at Northwestern, and I had a second kid, and we decided we wanted to move. I wanted to be in a real anthropology department. That's where my heart was. So I got a job at West Virginia University, from Chicago to West Virginia. I stayed there 7 years. I became a department chair, earned tenure, had several books out, and at some point, not a chair, I became the associate chair for the department. At some point, I decided that the philosophy at West Virginia University wasn't what I wanted. What really seemed to matter at West Virginia University was the research and the doctoral students. And the undergraduates came and went, and it wasn't critical. It was nice that they were there. My class might be 300 or 400 students that I would lecture to, and then you go back to your office and work on your research. And I decided that wasn't my life. That wasn't what I wanted to do. Even though, as I said, I'd done several books by that point in time, and I could do that, but that wasn't what I was into. So I began to look for another institution to move to. And I found a college, a university, that was like Buffalo State, was the Western Kentucky University. It's what you call the comprehensive universities. And I moved to Western Kentucky, and I was there. I chaired sociology, anthropology, social work, and criminology department. It's a big department. I then moved to University of Northern Iowa, and I was a dean of social sciences, and then became the provost at Northern Iowa. I was there 15 years, and at some point I said, I understand this stuff. I need to move on to something different, more interesting. So I looked for another job, and I went to Central Missouri, and that's how I became a president. I wasn't really aiming to do that. It just sort of one thing led to another. After a couple of years in Missouri, I was deciding it wasn't really the place for me. For a whole bunch of cultural reasons and other reasons, Missouri wasn't the spot for me. And I was out in San Diego, and I was at a conference, and there was a president there from an institution that I had known, and she'd become a search consultant. So I was sitting down having a glass of something with her on a patio. And she said, you know, I'm a search consultant now, and are you interested in moving? And I said, well, if you find the right place, you know, I can be bought. About 3 months later, she called me and she said, I just came back from a meeting with a search committee, and I found the right job for you. And she said, I said, where is it? She said, Buffalo. This was out of my realm of experience. You know, you're known exceptionally well for one thing, snow. So I said, Buffalo, tell me about Buffalo. And she did. She said she was up there, she was visiting with people on a search committee, and she said they're wonderful, warm people, they're really serious. The institution knows where it's heading, it knows what it wants to be, and people are on just terrific. You need to take a look. This is a great school. So I did. I got online and I talked to some people, and I'd met the previous president, Muriel Howard, about 4 or 5 years before, and been able to say hello once in a while. Great, great person. They have these boot camps for presidents when they're new. Take us off to the mountains, and if you're going to be a decent president, they bring you back. Otherwise, they leave you there in the mountains. But she was one of the sort of instructors at the boot camp, and I was a new president. That was 6 years ago. So I sent in my materials, and next thing you know, the search committee calls me, says, come on out to visit. So I did. I came out to Buffalo. It was a two-hour meeting at the hotel across from the airport. They don't want to let you into campus too quick till they know you, because they don't want to be embarrassed that look who we brought in. They want to make sure they vet the candidates. And I met with the search committee. It was about 25 people. And they sat around the table and asked hard questions, good questions. They weren't the gotcha questions that I'd seen a few places. And I really enjoyed myself. You know, it was one of those interviews with a lot of people that you said, I left thinking that was a great conversation. And I walked out and I called my wife and I said, I don't know if they know it yet, but I got a feeling this looks pretty good. And then I went across the street to the airport and walked up to the counter, and they said, I'm sorry, you won't be flying tonight. There's a little bit of snow in Baltimore. At least it was in Baltimore and not in Buffalo. But, you know, I was not disappointed. Some people get upset when their plane gets delayed. I got to go back across the street. They've got a shuttle to Duff's, if you don't know that about that hotel, and I went back for chicken wings. So I was great. Just keep me another night, keep me a week. I would have been fine with that. I then came to campus, and I found the same thing. The people were absolutely wonderful. The campus was wonderful, and the bottom line is I was offered the job. I went to visit the chancellor, and she liked what I had to say, so she offered me the job. And what's really interesting is that we have at Buffalo State just a wonderful collection of programs and courses. The character of the people on campus are wonderful. As I was doing my exit interview, by the way, Howard Zemsky took me for a tour of the architecture in Buffalo, and he kept stopping at buildings. And my wife and I love architecture. We've gone to Frank Lloyd Wright houses, and he stopped at a couple of Frank Lloyd Wright houses, and we were sold. He's a great tour guide. So I consider myself really lucky. So I'm here as a new president, starting July 1, and what's the first thing you have to do? You have to find out about the college. You have to say, what really goes on here? You can see only so much, and you really have to find out, was it they didn't tell me during the interview? Like, they didn't tell me about the budget. In New York State, nor the, if you should pardon the comment, the bureaucracy in New York State that you have to deal with as a president. But as I learned and learned more and more about Buffalo State, I came to discover, for example, that Buffalo State has 94,000 alums. I was really surprised. That's a lot of alums. And the majority of them live in and around Buffalo and Niagara. And that's amazing. And I began to go out to talk to faculty and staff on campus, talk to students, and talk to alums. And I travel all over talking to alums. And I met, as an alum, who's president of the American Bar Association. I met an alum who is the creator of Murphy Brown. We're all old enough to remember that, right? You tell that to students, they don't know what you're talking about, but Murphy Brown. I met an alum who's the chief academic officer of the Los Angeles Public School System. I met alums on the board of Roswell Park. I've met alums in all that are Academy Award winners for the documentaries. Just wonderful, wonderful people. And you know what they tell me when I ask them, so how did you get to where you do, where you are? And they'll say, it's because of Buffalo State. Buffalo State changed my life. Last night I was at the Buffalo Club, and I was talking about some of this stuff, and in the audience was Anthony Baines, person in Buffalo, and he said, he had told me once before about a person that had just changed, a faculty member who changed his life forever. And it was one of those stories that reminds you why you go into this line of business. So I learned a lot of things. I was really amazed middle of this year when I happened to say, how many students applied to come to Buffalo State last year? How many freshmen? New freshmen. And I got the data, and it was 17,000 students applied to come to Buffalo State. Now, we only enroll a freshman class of 1,500. So it turns out we're reasonably selective. We're listed as a selective institution. We have just under 12,000 students, which is the largest of SUNY's 13 comprehensive colleges. You know, SUNY has four research centers, UB being one. It then has 13 comprehensive colleges, and then the... So Buffalo State is the largest of the 13 comprehensive colleges. We're the only four-year urban campus in SUNY. That's a distinction. All the ones in New York City are CUNY, not SUNY. So that makes us different. We offer 165 undergraduate programs. You know, I still meet people that say, oh, you're at Buffalo State, the teacher's college. Yes, we were. We love that. That was our heritage. But we now offer 165 undergraduate programs and 65 graduate programs. This is what I'm learning about Buffalo State. If I ask people to guess what the largest major is, they'll assume they're not sure. But the largest major on our campus is business. 800 students majoring in business. 700 in elementary ed. Over 700 in communication. Over 700 in criminal justice. We do a lot of things. But not just do we have large majors, we have some really interesting, unique programs. Do you know there are only three art conservation programs in the United States? And ours is ranked number one. We place students all over the finest museums. In fact, I heard a story from a SUNY trustee that said that she had a painting that needed some work on it. She called the Metropolitan, and they said, why are you calling us? She said, could you the Metropolitan Museum of Art? They said, don't you know you have the best art conservation program in the country right up the road from you? Great story. It's a testament that if you call the Museum of Metropolitan. Metropolitan is what I meant. That's that program. You know, we have 800 in business. That conservation program admits only 10 students a year. So it's a three-year graduate program. It's got only 30 students. But it's critically important. Somebody's got to do it. It's not just a matter of big programs. There are also some very important programs. We are one of the only universities or colleges that has a program in creative studies. We're the only SUNY program with degrees in forensic science, with fashion and textile technology, with applied economics. And I could go on and on to the programs in which Buffalo State is the only one in SUNY. We're always growing. We don't just sit still. We just launched a master's degree program in professional and applied computational mathematics. Now, does that sound like something you might have anticipated from Buffalo State? but it absolutely is. And we launched that because that's the kind of programs that many businesses need these days, whether it's a bioscience business or others. I visited with an individual who said, you know, we think we need more actuarial scientists. We're starting to talk about putting together a program in actuarial science. And of course, we are known for our teacher ed programs, and we have over 70 certificate programs in teacher education. I kind of think that one of the things I like best is when you pull up to one of our two main gates, we have really two main entrances, one on Grant and one on Elmwood. And when I pull up to Elmwood and I see on the right is Rockwell Hall with that Rockwell Hall Performing Arts Center, and on the left, the Birchfield Penny, and those, the arts, and the performing arts and the fine arts are symbols of what Buffalo State is, and we do the arts very, very well at Buffalo State. You know, I really like, I've been at Division I, I was just watching the basketball game last night. Any of you watched the NCAA championship game? All right, well, I watched that, about half of it. The second half, it's always the funnest half, you know. Anyway, I was watching that last night. Well, that's because I didn't get home till the second half, actually. And I've been at a couple of Division I schools, and I've been at a couple of Division II schools. This is my first Division III school, and I'm really enjoying it. The interesting difference between Division I, II, and III is in Division III, we don't give scholarships for athletics. The students that come there because they're students first, and they want to play some ball. But this year, Buffalo State basketball, men's basketball, was in the Sweet 16. And that means they're one of the top 16 basketball Division III programs in the United States. Pretty special. We're not thought of as an athletic powerhouse. But and three of our students won national championships in track this year. One, the first woman in our history to ever win a national championship. And she ran the 55-meter dash in something under 7 seconds, which is faster than I can run it, that's for sure. What I really like, though, is 44% of those students have above a 3-point GPA on a scale where 4 points all A's. I went to that award ceremony. When you have 44% of your students in athletics earning above a 3-point, that's something. And I can tell you, when I was at a Division I school, the athletic director used to tell me that his biggest challenge is keeping his athletes on the sports page, not the front page. Think about that. In other words, they get in trouble. And we have great student athletes at Buffalo State. So just to sum up, I've learned a lot, and you know, I've got a lot more to learn, but I've learned a lot about Buffalo State. I've learned that it's a fairly selective admissions institution. It sees itself as an institution of opportunity. It's proud of its diversity. It's proud of its focus on high quality undergraduate education. We have nearly 2,000 graduate students, but it focuses on its undergraduates. And then I've learned a lot about Buffalo because I've been out talking to people for nearly a year, 8-9 months. The people are warm and friendly. It's very, in a sense, Midwestern. It's got a fascinating history. Just about 3 days ago, I was reading on the web about the Niagara Falls and the fight over whether they would use AC or DC current. What history? I mean, you had Edison versus Westinghouse, direct current or alternating current. How are they going to get it from Niagara Falls down to Buffalo? I mean, you know, that decision, that argument, set the course for electricity in this country. And it's right here. I spent 3 hours reading the web about that debate. It was fascinating. And Buffalo has its challenges, as you all know. And those things help me think about the future of Buffalo and the future of Buffalo State. And so when you think about imagining Buffalo or imagining Buffalo State, this is where I come to. But you can't understand how I would imagine Buffalo State if you don't know something about who I am and something about what Buffalo State is now. Okay. Well, in my mind, there are three things that stand out, three areas or three goals that really stand out for Buffalo State. And we need to focus on these three. The first is our mission of teaching, research, and service. In other words, we have to focus our mission, and I'll talk about that in a minute. The second is the educational pipeline in Buffalo. And the third is economic and community development in Buffalo. Now, clearly, and I'm laying those out as Buffalo State's three areas to focus on. Now, clearly, at Buffalo State, our fundamental purpose is serving our students. There is no doubt about that. My vision for Buffalo State is that we be a nationally recognized college or university that delivers a world-class university education by offering small college learning environments coupled with large university opportunities. Small college learning environments coupled with large university opportunities. So students have real professors in the classroom, but they have choices of plenty of majors and many different faculty. It's what I call, I just thought about this yesterday as a matter of fact, I called it the Goldilocks strategy. Why is that? Because we're not too big, we're not too small, we are just right. That's it. And so I thought about that yesterday, and I sort of wrote it down here. And that's exactly what I believe. It's why I left West Virginia University and went to a school like Buffalo State. We have to have faculty that engage the students, that they offer research opportunities for undergraduates, service learning, volunteerism, internship, all those things that engage a student in their own education. So my first goal for Buffalo State is to continuously improve what's already great educational programs and opportunities. My second goal that I mentioned earlier is to help stop the leaks in the education pipeline. You have to know, and I'm sure every one of you know, that education is critical for success in the 21st century knowledge economy. There is no doubt that a college degree is almost becoming a prerequisite to a middle-class lifestyle in this country. Chancellor Zimpfer appointed me to co-chair a committee on the education pipeline for all of SUNY to develop some strategies for helping students become successful from cradle to career. Now, if they didn't already call it cradle to career, I would have called it prenatal to postgraduate, because I think it actually starts with having moms that are healthy. So this whole idea is that we need to, I'm an anthropologist, so I can say it takes a village and I get some legitimacy, but it takes a whole community. It's not just what's in the classroom. It's not just what's happening in the classroom. It's the students that don't come ready for school. It's the students. I have to tell you this. When I met the academic vice president for the Los Angeles Public Schools, and I said, what are you doing interesting in Los Angeles? And she said, well, we're starting to put dentists in some of our schools. I said, why is that? She said, some of these young people, they come to school, they're in such pain. How can they sit and learn anything? And it's just the idea that we have to do more than educate teachers. We have to have community groups, community organizations, dentists, faith-based groups, everybody, wrapping our arms around the kids in our neighborhoods to help them go from, and the moms, the prenatal, all the way up through high school and to graduate. Now, Buffalo State is also in the teacher education business. We've just launched... we proposed to SUNY two new programs. One is called one is a clinically rich urban math education program. And the second is a clinically rich urban science program, because we think urban education is different than suburban education. And we think our teachers need to start to be trained like doctors with lots of clinical experience, so that when they get in that teaching job, they stay in it. And that responds to the National Blue Ribbon Task Force on Teacher Preparation. So we're going to do that at Buffalo State. But we're also going to work with, I've been talking to Superintendent Williams, and I've been talking to SUNY, And we're going to try to work on this Cradle to Career Network. And I'm reaching out to people all over Buffalo. And I've been on the phone with the superintendent on several occasions, Superintendent Williams. And we are going to see if we can work with anybody who wants to work with us to build networks to help support our kids. And the success will be when we call them all our kids, I think. So Buffalo State's ready to be a partner in that. So that's really the second, you know, is our core mission of teaching at Citra on the campus, our education pipeline. And the third part is the community and economic development. And, you know, with Marion Deutschman sitting in the audience, I almost feel embarrassed bringing this up. I should have her come up and talk to you about it. Because if you don't know, Marion has been the guru of community support and the community partnerships program for some time. I won't say how long.
5 years?
Okay. So, but when I was first meeting with faculty and staff on campus, people kept talking to me about some of the things they're doing. I met the technology chair, and he says, we've got this, all these big pieces of equipment that will allow us to rapidly prototype if an entrepreneur wants to build a new product. We can take it from their drawings and produce rapid prototypes in plastic, then they can tinker with them, and then we can produce a metal one. We need to reach out and find entrepreneurs who need that so we can help them grow. Wonderful. And then I met folks working over there on the west side for ages. They've been working on literacy in the refugee communities. And then I met a faculty member who's working, she's going to Wegmans every Saturday morning doing reading and literacy programs for kids. Wegmans gives her a room to sit there and do that. I was finding faculty and staff doing all these sorts of things. So I said, let me treat all these people to lunch. And I said, let me invite you to lunch and see how many come. Well, I had so many people that wanted to come talk about Buffalo State in the community that I had to have two lunches with about 25 each. And we sat there, and what was really interesting was people were doing so many terrific things, but many of them did not know the other one who was doing it. Sometimes in the same neighborhood. I mean, we're a big organization. We have 1,800 people, and they don't all know what everybody else is doing. We're in silos. So this year, I've asked one of our vice president retired. So instead of replacing him, I gave him a special assignment, part time, temporarily, to survey, to audit all of what goes on our campus and find out what Buffalo State is doing, so we will have a list, or try to have a list. And among those things that he came up to me and told me about was that Buffalo State has one of New York's 24 small business development centers. It's been in place, it's called an SBDC, Small Business Development Center. There are 24 in the state of New York, one is at Buffalo State. Each year, those people at that center meet individually on multiple occasions with 1,000 different entrepreneurs to help them start new businesses, create business plans. They just won an award as the top SBDC in the state of New York. But since they started in 1984, they have helped 14,000 businesses invest $131 million in Western New York. That's some serious good work, and they are doing a terrific job. Just recently, I asked them, well, so what are you doing lately? Well, they've partnered. We have a restaurant management program, hospitality management. They've partnered with the hospitality management program to create a restaurant institute. So the individuals who want to start a restaurant in Buffalo can go and work with them on how to do a business plan and how to do all this. And God knows Buffalo needs more restaurants. I've never had such good food in my life. I tell you, when I go out of town, you know, I'm like a spokesperson for Buffalo. Yeah, they ought to hire me. I tell people, you know, I tell people, I have never seen, you know, people talk about the weather. I have never had a more pleasant summer. I mean, I don't know of any place I've lived where you can go sit at a sidewalk cafe in August and enjoy yourself. It's just wonderful. So, but anyway, the Small Business Development Center is terrific. But we have lots of people doing this, but it's not coordinated and it's not well known. And about a couple of weeks ago, I invited the presidents of the six universities and colleges and community colleges in Western New York, from Jamestown to UB to ECC and Alfred, and they all came, and all but one, who was busy that day, came, and they brought staff, and the one who couldn't come sent staff, and we got together to sit around my conference table and say, can we work together? What can we do together that we can't do separately? Where are we overlapping? Where are we not aligning? And they all agreed that we would come back and we would all do an audit of our campuses and look at how we are already collaborating to better help Western New York. So those are the two strategic foci three strategic foci that I came up with, and I just want to tell you a couple things that sort of surround these three main focuses, and then I'll turn it over to you for some questions or whatever, or maybe I will. The first is that we have been doing a lot of construction on our campus. You may have noticed we've got a new residence hall, 7 stories tall, 507 beds, and that's going to be opening up this summer. We are in the middle of doing a new science building so we can offer world-class sciences. We are about to break ground on a new technology building. We have renovated the quad. We're expanding space for our art conservation program. We're building a recital hall in Rockwell Hall. And we have a couple other buildings that we're about to launch requests to get design folks, architects, in to look at how we might renovate them. On top of which, SUNY has approved a $650 million master plan for 2013 through 2023. So that's good for Buffalo, good for Buffalo State. The second one that sort of surrounds these other things is, as some of you may know, this has been a sort of a difficult time for public education, all of the public entities. The states, not just New York, the states are not wealthy. And so there have been budget challenges. And we'll deal with that. We just closed 56 positions on our campus and other things. But what I want the college to do is get that work done and then move on and think about the future, think about better things. And so in my State of the College address a few weeks ago, I designated next year the year for the arts at Buffalo State. And we are going to look to bring all our arts programs together. We're going to get people from on campus and off campus. And what I'm looking forward to is I want to go to students doing poetry readings in the middle of the quad and bands, and I want to have stuff in Rockwell Hall. And we've now got people from other campuses and other community venues calling and saying, we'd like to be on the committee. We'd like to be part of it. And I just believe that the arts feeds our soul and raises our spirits. And so in times when there are difficulties, we'll deal with the difficulties, but let's use the arts, performing arts, fine arts, to really bring us up a notch. And we'll call on the Birchfield Penny and the Albright Knox and everybody to do that. So that's the two things that I thought surrounded. So finally, let me tell you in conclusion. Well, good. I'm not bad. In conclusion, I've spent more than 4 decades in higher education, and I've got certain pretty strong beliefs, and I want to tell you a couple of them. First of all, like Robert Persig, who some of you may know, wrote a book called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, I believe that the university is the church of reason. It's not just the bricks and mortar, it's about the idea of a university. It's about what it stands for. And I believe that public higher education is essential to a thriving cultural, civic, and democratic society. I truly believe that. Second, like Peter Drucker, who's been credited as being one of the 3 individuals who transformed the Japanese economy, was a business guru. He believes that higher education is the economic engine for the 21st century. And he said that the GI Bill was the greatest economic development policy in history, because it sent people to college. And there's no doubt in my mind that higher education has never been more important to the future for our economic growth and our cultural and civic life. And third, I truly believe that public universities have a public purpose. And I'm going to echo the motto of my friends over at Portland State, because they have a big sign across a bridge. It's an overpass, actually, when you drive under it. And it says, "Let the university serve the city." And I believe that part of our job is not just about those young people that are right on campus, but it's to serve the city, and that city is Buffalo. So it's challenging times in New York State, especially. We can't divert ourselves from our core values or our fundamental purpose. We are an anchor institution in Buffalo. We've been in Buffalo since 1871, which is before I was born. And we're here to help with the cultural and economic well-being of our wonderful city and our terrific state. I'm honored to lead Buffalo State. I'm very fortunate to have come to Buffalo, and I only regret that I had to wait this long to realize what a wonderful city this is. And thank you for your time, and thank you for being here today. And I will be happy to answer questions if we have still have time.
If we can. Mic, what I do is run around and let's get a couple of questions.
I can probably be heard if you want to run around.
You can be heard, but I want to make sure the questions are
heard.
Yeah,
no, that's
well.
Right. Yeah.
Just a couple. Let's get started.
Thanks very much. I have a background in physics and anthropology, so I guess I can come with you, I suppose. I studied mathematics and physics. The story that you often hear in the news about Buffalo is one of population decline. And it seems to me that given all of the universities that we have in Buffalo, among which is the one you're president of, that we have an ample supply of young people coming out of university who could, if they could, stay here and do something different with the city. So how can we, as older people, help to facilitate that?
Thank you. That's a great question. There are some schools that recruit many students from far away, and many of those students will go back home. And there are some schools that will focus on the region, and their students are likely to stay closer after they graduate. So what I mean to say by that is it's a natural tendency. Many of our students from Buffalo will go off to someplace else, and then they'll probably come back. So one of the things I would focus on if I was Buffalo is I would make a special effort to recruit back students who've gone off to college and maybe tending to stay there or to go to someplace else, is to find a strategy to bring them home, okay? Because we can't, I had a conversation with the governor of Iowa when I was there. He was sitting in our conference room, me and the president, I was the vice president. And he said, "How are you going to keep Iowa students home?" And I said, "The only way I can assure that my graduate doesn't move to someplace like New York City is give them a degree that's so bad that they can't get a job anyplace. Like, you won't do that." So there's going to be some tendency for young folks to go off, but we want to recruit them back. So that would be one strategy. And of course, the other part of that is it's beyond the control of the institutions, universities. There, we need to have businesses. Modern businesses, high-tech businesses, the kind of businesses and industries that these students want to go into. The real definition of what's called the knowledge economy means that, as opposed to the old days, people always use that word, but what does it really mean? In the old days, you built a factory. Somebody came in, they worked at the factory, they retired, you brought somebody else in, the factory stayed there. But the knowledge economy means that if you've got a degree and you're a computer programmer, you don't, by and large, need too much factory.
And when you leave with your yellow pencil and your pad or whatever you need, you take your knowledge with you. And that knowledge is the means of production as opposed to the factory. So we have to have an environment, whether it's dog parks or bicycle paths or arts and leisure, that attracts people who live and work in the knowledge economy. The examples are Austin, Texas, Silicon Valley, those kinds of places, because they go out to attract the Apples and the IBMs and those things.
I'm going to ask a question, because one of the statistics you gave was concerning. We had Superintendent Williams here in the fall, and he expressed his support for the arts and his desire to encourage more graduates going into a community college, Buffalo State College. He's got about a 52% graduation rate. So first he's got to make sure he gets students even graduating from high school, but that's typical of inner city schools. My question is, when you say you're now accepting less than one out of 10 applicants, as I recall, 17,000 applicants, 1,500 accepted, over the next few years, will that capacity increase? If he's successful, my point is, in trying to get this going, you're working with them, and they hit the bottleneck of saying, well, you wanted me to go to college, but where?
Yeah.
How does that look, given the budget constraints, given everything you know? Is there a desire to increase that funnel so that we can accept more and more students from a city?
Good question. One nuanced difference is that we had 17,000 applicants. We enrolled 1,500. We accepted more than the 1,500. In other words, what happens is that students may apply to several places, and we accept about 30-40% of the 17,000, and of those, some may choose to go someplace else for any of a number of reasons. They may find they get a bigger scholarship someplace else, or what have you. We would like to increase the capacity. For us, we have an interesting dilemma, and that is quality versus quantity. And what's important about Buffalo State is that when that student comes into the classroom, they get a real professor, that they get our average class size is 23. We have a 16, almost 17 to 1 student faculty ratio. And we believe in having opportunities for students to do undergraduate research working with faculty, to have kind of hands-on engaging education. And we have to constantly figure out at what point do we lose what we consider is most important. And we would like to do more. But that's the challenge of the budget. And that's, you know, we're just working through a $10 million problem. And you have to reduce your budget by, we just finished with 6.4, and it looks like probably another 3 or more to go. So it looks, you know, when you're worrying on the one hand about how do you reduce your spending by $10 million, and yet more and more people want to come in. So it's a great challenge. And I can only say, write your legislator.
Looks like we've hired the right man to meet that challenge. Folks, you'll be able to stay for a few minutes for individual questions and answers. We try to stick to this lunch hour format, so thank you very much. We've got a couple of thank yous here.
And as an aside, that was November 15th, 1896, that switch was pulled and electricity was transferred, and that was a big moment. We were supposed to have an exposition, but there was a little Spanish-American War that delayed it, and it became a Pan-American to celebrate electricity and the end of a war. Anyway, so that's right in your backyard, obviously. You'll hear more about Pan-Americans. Here's a certificate of appreciation, and I'm going to point out something the rest would be familiar with. Our logo, this is to yourself for helping us imagine from the center, but you'll see this logo, and it's your backyard. It's an image that is on the upper column of the old Buffalo Savings Bank, which has a gold dome. Many of us know it as the Gold Dome Bank, just a few blocks from here. And it was how we, an artist saw us in the 1920s. And this was about the arts, and that wonderful field area that you see is where Buff State campus is right now. So that is something. You mentioned Frank Lloyd Wright's buildings and what we're giving. We're trying to imagine ourselves as a major global center for studying Frank Lloyd Wright. We've got great product here and a tremendous, what will become a $50 million restoration when it's completed of the Martin House. So understanding the philosophy, Donald Hoffman's book of Frank Lloyd Wright is yours, as well as a beautiful book created last year by the Eastman House and our last speaker, actually, of Chautauqua. Some incredible photography, along with Reflections by Thomas Merton, which was the topic of that presentation. So thank you very much. You did just what we hoped you would do, help us see where you've been so we can better see where you are taking Buffalo State College and therefore the community, because you're such a major, major force in this community as an urban campus. Now, to our audience, thank you for coming. Every Tuesday in April. This is very unique. And as I mentioned, we'll have two speakers coming up from Chautauqua. Next week, next Tuesday, Andrew Nixon is the executive director of the Chautauqua County Visitor Center. He'll be followed by Randall Kramer, who's the director of the Greater Buffalo Cultural Alliance, newly created last fall, and part of this Give for Greatness campaign that's going on in March and April. So we'll hear how that's going. And then finally, John Schmitz is the archivist and historian for Chautauqua Institution. He will be here on the fourth Tuesday of the month, the 26th. And then we go May, June, et cetera. And then we break for the summertime and let people go to Chautauqua. So with that, I thank you all for attending. You make this possible because you show up. We can invite a speaker and have this community dialogue as we all imagine our future. Thanks, and see you next week. Sign this and wants to be on it, make sure you do. I lost my pen along the road of life here, but you see one laying around. I'll
try to weave that in. You know, I was watching last night instead of a basketball.